At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Trana. Thank you for listening. Great show today. Adnan Verk, who is the new play-by-play man for Monday Night Raw and also worked for MLB Network, NHL Network, does some podcasts, worked at ESPN, and is a huge movie fan. Got the Oscars this Sunday, if you're listening before Sunday, the 6th. Lot of talk about his career, joining WWE, he's firing from ESPN, bouncing back, having so many jobs, and then tons of movie and TV talk with Adnan. It was a very, 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 very fun conversation. So check that out in a moment. But let me first tell you that if you missed any recent episodes, if you're a gambling fan, Todd Furman was on last week. You know him if you're in the gambling world. We talked about a bunch of things related to sports betting, so make sure you give that a listen. Andrew Marchand on a bunch of sports media news 2 weeks ago. WWE fans listening for Adnan Verk. Edge was on 3 weeks ago. Check that out. And then Scott Van Pelt 4 weeks ago. If you missed any of those, give a listen in the archives. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. And if you can rate and review, that helps as well. All right, enough plugging. Let's get to Adnan Verk right now, right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, this is usually where I list the jobs, but if I think if I did that, it'd be here till about May. So we'll skip it and we'll go through it when we start getting into the conversation. His latest job is the play-by-play man for Monday Night Raw, WWE on the USA Network. Adnan Verk. Adnan, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. First time, long time. I'm glad we finally get to catch up. You can ask whatever you like. We're going to go in different directions, but I'm going to give you my feedback first. So my favorite episodes have included Robert Flores, Lauren Shahadi, my teammates at MLB Network, Van Pizzi, great, talking about bad beats, James Andrew Miller, the HBO book. You and I share a kinship and an adoration of The Sopranos and The Larry Sanders Show. It's one of the all-time great shows. And
so of course, underrated.
I tell people, they're like, wow, it was before my time. I go, you know, that's like Beethoven was before my time, but I can still appreciate it. Hemingway was before my time. I can go back and read The Old Man of the Sea. Yeah. Larry Sanders Show is the best. So I'm eager to finally chat with you. I hope things are well.
I really appreciate that. It's always bizarre to me when someone actually listens, when I hear that someone actually listened to the podcast. I still think there's like four people listening when I do this. And I've written a column for SI for 15 years, and I still think like four of my friends read it and no one. And then someone says something to me, I'm like, oh my God, you read it.
I feel the same way about my own work. So yeah, I appreciate it.
It's bizarre.
By the way, so before we get going, The Sopranos guys would have been the best ever. If it's any Sopranos listeners right now who are like me and Jimmy, listen to Scirripa and Imperioli when they were on Jimmy's pod. You should obviously listen to their pod talking Sopranos, but those guys were great.
Yeah, they were really good. That turned out, you know, it's one of those things where you have them on and you think, what don't we know about The Sopranos? Like, what can we possibly discuss that people don't know about? You know what I mean? And it's, you know, my dream interview is probably Larry David. And even with him, you know, everyone knows the show's not scripted. Everyone, you know, it's hard to get some, but I thought Imperioli and Steve Scirripa did it. Yeah. They did a good job when I had them on last summer. So I was impressed with that. And then Larry said, like, Larry, I can get into a whole thing on Larry Sanders. But I'll just say this. If, you know, I went back and rewatched it during the pandemic when we were quarantined. It holds up.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely holds up.
So. It's one of the few shows that the finale is the best episode of the entire show.
They did have a good finale, if I remember correctly.
Like Jim Carrey was unbelievable that final episode. Yeah. The goodbye, like in the first scene, he's like, "Should I thank God?" He's watching other clips, and it ends with the three of them together, Artie and Hank. And I never, until I started working in television, I realized how prescient that show was. Like, it is so exacting from the needy insecurity and self-absorption of the host to the gung-ho producers to the doofus sidekick. Like Conan O'Brien once said, he goes, "The best thing that show nailed is the combination of God, I love this so much," and "God, I got to get out of this." Way that Larry has that duality, it's amazing.
Rip Torn on that show is just beyond brilliant. Just one of the best.
If you Google Rip Torn one-liners from that show, it's unreal. Yeah. And Judd Apatow tells great stories about, obviously,
You know, it's funny. We'll get into all the sports stuff and Raw and everything else and all your other jobs. But since we're on this topic, I'm just curious because you do have the movie podcast.
Yeah.
Cinephile with Adnan Verk. And I guess it's going to the new Lebatard startup. Do you have the same passion for TV as movies, or is it movies first, TV second, or would you say they're like 1A, 1B?
Yeah, it's 1A, 1B, Jimmy. You know, growing up, I adored Scorsese. I still do. And I said, okay, I'm going to be like Martin Scorsese. So I remember when I went to Ryerson, which was the university in Toronto, and listen, being the son of immigrants, there's no way my parents were going to pay for film education. What is that? No. So my clever idea was I was going to major in radio and television arts, which I did. And I said, Robert Altman, you know, my favorite book is Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, which is about Scorsese and Coppola and Lucas and all those directors of the 70s. And one of those is Robert Altman. And I said, that's interesting. Altman was a TV director. And then he segued to film. So I said, okay, I'll tell my parents I'm going to school for broadcasting. They're going to dream that I'm like on 60 Minutes, but I'll do the TV directing thing and go to movies. And instead, I started there and I took like, you know, a film 101 class, and I was terrible at directing. And you know, when people ask you for advice, I always tell them, it's not necessarily what you love, it's what you're actually good at. So even though I wanted to be a director, I was actually horrible at it because I had no visual sense. And obviously you can tell I'm very voluble. So it's all about words rather than pictures. So I always said, okay, I'd love to work in movies. When that didn't work, I said, this is a natural segue, broadcasting. And of course, always been a sports fan.
Yeah. Because I'm more of a TV than movie guy, but the Oscars are this week, and I know so we'll get into all that. Let's start with Raw, though, because it was a fascinating announcement when it came out.
Yeah.
One of my good friends who I've had on the podcast a bunch is Kyle Brandt, and I love the trajectory of someone's career. You know, he was on The Real World and then Days of Our Lives, Rome, and now Good Morning Football. You started ESPN. I mean, going through it, you covered everything there, MLB, college football, college basketball, talk shows. And now you got MLB Network, DAZN, Monday Night Raw. Yeah. Did you, when the Monday Night Raw thing came up, what was your first reaction?
I love the fact that when you say it, I'm still as astounded when you actually say those words. Yeah. I'm like, I'm still dreaming, Jimmy. This can't actually be true. The way it went down is, you know, Nick Khan was my longtime agent at CAA. And of course, he's now the president of WWE. And you know, this is a relationship business. So you have a good relationship with somebody, that means something. And when Nick left, you know, I spoke to him and thanked him for all he did for me and my family. I'll always be so grateful to Nick and his stewardship and mentorship. And I said something to the effect of, hey, if there's anything for me, you know, let me know. And he was like, yeah, okay, sure. Never thinking it would come to fruition. And my understanding is the WWE Brain Trust wanted a new voice, wanted something different. And Michael Cole, who in addition to being the voice of SmackDown, is obviously a part of the Brain Trust. And he was talking with my agent, Matt Olson, who in many ways is Nick's protege, and said, okay, you know, who's the guy in your roster you think might be able to do this? Okay, what about Adnan? That's intriguing. You know, has he done anything like this? As you said, a lot of things at ESPN, virtually everything. So they sent some stuff I'd call boxing into zone, et cetera. And then I went to the audition. But to your point, it's one thing to say, oh, there's mutual interest. It's another thing to think you actually get the job. Like when I flew down for the audition, you've done this. We go to jobs, you go, well, hey, why not? Like, why wouldn't you at least try this? But I called a few matches and everything seemed to work out. And when they actually called and said, you got the job, I was floored. But to your point, it's also about managing everything. We're in a very tricky time in the world in terms of COVID, traveling. I have a full-time job with Major League Baseball. So I was like, all right, how are we going to do this that I'm able to travel and overcome quarantines? As you can see, in the last month and a half, the world has improved immeasurably in America. As of April 3rd, the CDC said, if you're fully vaccinated, you can travel domestically without quarantining, as I am. So it's been a lot of excitement and elation mixed with trying to balance all the different balls in the air. But when it, the news actually came, to your point, I felt like I was jumping out of a birthday cake. It's clearly the opposite of Marilyn Monroe. But imagine, imagine keeping that surprise. Jimmy, I told five people, my parents.
Well, so tell me, so the announcement came out a week ago. Let's see, Monday was
April 12th.
The 12th, when did you know you got the job?
So I auditioned February 5th. They told me end of February, you got the job, but then I had to get MLB to sign off in March. So that took some time, the quarantining, the vaccinations.
But WWE basically said the job is yours if you want at the end of February.
Yeah. If I got
and
that
you
right.
Kept that a secret till April 12th. That's impressive in this business.
That's I was about to say, isn't it? Yeah. Like I was joking. I said, I told my parents, my brother, my wife, and one of my kids, I have four kids. I told one of them, I said, you can't breathe a word to it. So to your point in this business, that's pretty wild.
Yeah. A couple of things on the WWE gig. Well, tell me first, what is your history as a wrestling fan? Like,
sure.
Were you in it, you know, Saturday mornings in the 80s? I don't even know if you were born in the 80s and Saturday mornings when they had it on, but like, where did it start? Where did it end? Where did it pick up? Take me through that.
Sure. Well, as a kid, I was certainly a rabid fan. I mean, I wish my dad still had the Hulkamaniac shirts I had as a kid, but me and my brother would watch it all the time. And I'm sure anybody who has siblings listening knows what it's like to replicate moves and imitate it. And being Canadian, I mean, I'll never forget that WrestleMania 6 at Skydome when it was Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior. I mean, I remember at the time, that was like the highest rated event, most fans ever at an event at Skydome. Like it was breathtaking what a spectacle it was.
Yeah.
Demolition, my favorite tag team. But like that, I mean, that era is unreal. I mean, particularly Hulk, Ultimate Warrior, I mean, Ric Flair. I mean, that whole generation of stars, I think anybody my age loves and adores. And then when I worked at The Score, which was, you know, my first major job in Toronto, which was a national sports network, the best ratings we had was our WWE content. So we actually had Raw, we had SmackDown. So like I interviewed Torrey Wilson, interviewed other stars when they'd come through. Now, when I worked at ESPN, obviously I've got so many jobs, different things, as you said, you kind of move away from it. But that natural fandom and enthusiasm has never waned. And I have such respect for the operation. I know you're a fan as well. As I tell people, I go, I have a full respect and appreciation what WWE does. I'm amazed at anybody who would not.
You have give me an all-time favorite like storyline that sticks with you.
Well, I mean, listen, anything with Bobby the Brain Heenan, I just thought he was such a mastermind. Like I was watching it. This guy is so clever, the way he's manipulating everything. I just thought his smarts was great. I mean,
probably,
maybe he's a little, go ahead.
Probably the best to ever do it from a broadcasting standpoint. Wrestling.
I thought he was amazing. And that was always interesting to me is like, as a little guy, I wasn't saying, hey, I wish I was Tito Santana and nailing a flying form. I was more like, man, mouth of the South here. Like Jimmy's heart is unbelievable. Like just, I love those guys. The Ted DiBiase, right? Million Dollar Man. The way they pulled the strings. Loved all those guys.
And one of the things that struck me as interesting when it came out that you got the job and then, you know, cause you know, I'm a wrestling fan and then I'm sort of like, you know, covering media for SI.
Sure.
And one of the things that struck me that I thought was interesting and a little scary for you is, I mean, you got right into it. Yeah. Boom, Monday Night Raw. No, you know, a month doing this show, a month doing that show, maybe, you know, were you okay with that? Would you like some practice shows? I know you called two matches or something like that, but that's not really doing a 3-hour telecast live on a Monday night. What about jumping right into it with no sort of, I don't want to use the word practice, but you know, maybe a little experience under the belt.
No, you're right. I mean, that's why they say ignorance is bliss. I mean, for obviously learned fans, they say, listen, the Raw after Mania is a huge deal and you're making your debut there. I said, absolutely. But I'm of the opinion it's baptism by fire. To your point, I called a few matches off a monitor, but you're really only going to know it once you're in the chair. I can only watch other people doing it so much. So my thing is kind of like a diet. I've still been trying to lose the same 20 pounds for 20 years, but it's not where you start. It's where you finish. So you're going to have to get to your point. Suppose I'd done a month of matches. That first night, it's still going to be bumpy. You're still going to make mistakes. You're only going to get better by doing it. So I could certainly understand if they had said, hey, listen, we want you to do something else first. But at the same time, I respected the fact that clearly they had confidence in me to say, listen, you know what? Go out and get this done. And I should mention, I'm burying the lead here. The fact I'm with Corey Graves and Byron Saxton, when I knew I had those guys, I said, okay, they're really putting me in a position to succeed. Like Graves is like Herb Street. I mean, I worked with him and I said, man, this guy, he can do play-by-play and he can do color. He's a former wrestler. He knows it. Byron,
good podcaster
again.
Podcaster, too.
Good podcast. Yeah, I said, Corey, you know, Byron, same thing. He has all the elements of great broadcasting along with fandom. So I said, okay, you know what? It is a big-time spot, but they're giving you a great team around you, Kevin Dunn producing, et cetera. And to your point, listen, I auditioned for the job. I mean, if they didn't think I was good enough to do it, they wouldn't have given me the gig. So I auditioned, they liked it, and away we go.
Was there any hesitation on your part, or was it a yes right away?
Oh, yes right away. I mean, the only concern I would have had is, as I've been joking, I've got more jobs than kids. So with four boys.
I want to go through that, yeah.
Yeah, with four boys.
I mean, there is a chance. I mean, I guess, you never know, but people get thrown into that announce table basically on a regular basis. I mean, you know, even though you're the play-by-play man, there could end up being some physicality to it at some point. Well, intentional or not intentional?
Well, to your point, anybody who's ever denigrated me, I'm sure, is praying for this moment. Like, oh, thank God, he's going to get a steel chair across his back. But to your point, night one, when Drew McIntyre got thrown to the table, I did not know that was coming. And you can watch the tape. You will quickly see Corey and Byron bailed. And I, as an idiot, didn't know any better. I just hung in there. Meantime, this Scottish warrior is landing on the table in front of me. So night two, I realized when they come, you got to run. So
a little different than being in the studio at Baseball MLB Network in Secaucus. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Dan Plesac is not going to throw me to the wall if he disagrees with my opinion, or Bill Ripken or whomever. So it was definitely jarring, but fun at the same time. And to your point, when you get opportunities like this, you got to say yes. You and I know how fickle this business is. These rarely come around. Just say yes and figure it out.
Now, I know Michael Cole was sort of the catalyst in getting you the job. Have you met in person, face to face, Vince yet?
I have. Yeah, I met him after the second show, and he was great. He was really supportive. He gave good feedback. And
now, is he, I don't know if you want to, is he in your headset during Raw? That's
I would say he's giving real time feedback.
Okay.
So I definitely know what he's feeling, but. Yeah. It's interesting. Like when you're there, it's like, as a lifelong fan, there's so much that goes through your mind when you see Vince McMahon. Like, obviously you think of him, what he's done on the air, but then off the air, like I was telling my friends, I go, this is like one of the great American success stories ever.
Oh, without a doubt.
Right. If you think back, like how he bet on himself with first WrestleMania, the fact what this has grown into, this a global entity, like it's kind of remarkable. Like as I was talking to him, it's tough not to just think about all that he's accomplished. It's amazing.
I've always said that if there was going to be one documentary I want made from the sports world, yes, I'm counting WWE in the sports world. So if you're some asshole on Twitter, don't tweet me and say it's not a sport. I think by far and away, the number one person for that is Vince, for me at least, because there's so much, in this day and age, especially, we sort of know everything about everybody, and we still don't know much about Vince. I think Simmons is doing something. I think there's something in the works, maybe with Simmons doing it. I remember I spoke to Simmons when he had the phenomenal Andre the Giant doc on HBO. And, I asked about another wrestling doc, and he said, he'd want it to be Vince, and would love to see that one day for sure.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, because you said, like, I can't think of any other corporation or operation of that size and popularity where somebody's that involved day to day.
Yeah.
Right. Most corporations, SI or ESPN, MLB Network, we have bosses, but they're not literally day to day going through everything. I mean, that kind of passion and work ethic, I think it's unparalleled. I really do.
Now, wrestling fans can be, let's just say they're a unique bunch. Because I've experienced it myself when I've had wrestlers on this podcast, and I see the tweets that come in, and I just can't even believe what I'm reading.
Sorry to jump you, but I love Edge, fellow Canadian. Very well read. He read 72 books last year.
He was great. He was great. But the broadcasting is very, very important to WWE fans.
Yeah.
And listen, I've said this a million times. Anyone who's calling anything, any play-by-play person, analyst, don't check Twitter. Don't look at Twitter.
Yeah.
Stay away. It's not worth it. But wrestling fans are sort of another level. Have you experienced any positive? I don't know if I haven't checked, so I don't know if it's been positive, negative.
Sure.
It's only been 2 weeks. So for me, I'm not going to like write a column off someone doing something for 2 weeks, but
yeah,
obviously fans don't care. Have you checked feedback? And if so, what has it been like?
So it's so funny. One of the great pieces of advice Michael Cole said to me, he goes, listen, whatever you do, please don't check social media. And I kind of nodded, and he goes, no, he goes, I'm serious about this. Because no one listens, and then they check it. And either way, Jimmy, it's not good. If they say you're great, well, that doesn't matter. If they say you're awful, that also doesn't matter. Like, there's one man's opinion who matters. So don't lose sight of that. What was funny is this. I get home and I took Michael's advice to heart, and I'm talking to my wife. She goes, how'd it go? And I said, I thought I did all right. I made some mistakes, certainly some stuff I'd like to get back. But Corey and Byron were great. I think I'll get better. I thought this was good. And I'll only really get better by watching it. So when I rewatched the whole show, I watched start to finish. I haven't yet for the second one, but I will. You'll say, okay, that was better than I thought. That was worse than I thought. And I think whenever you make a mistake, again, you'd like to make zero mistakes. You want about 1,000. Right. But if you make a mistake, don't make the same mistake twice. Just learn from it.
Right.
My wife starts saying, oh, this person tweeted this. This one said that. I go, no, I don't want to know this. Why would you tell me this?
Yeah, yeah.
I called my parents, Jimmy, and they had it go. Same thing. Well, some good, some bad. They go, yeah, your dad was checking Twitter. And I go, oh, for God's sakes. I go, it's amazing to me that when people are looking for feedback, again, social media, as you and I both know, it's generally a place where people are spewing vitriol. It is not where they're saying, man, Trina's great. I love his stuff.
Right, right. And, you know, it's, and I do think, you know, you're going to have, they're going to be wrestling fans out there, whether this is justified or not, who are probably just going to have sort of a negative impression of you, not even based on what you're calling, just because you don't have a wrestling background. They used to Jim Ross, they, you know, so right off the bat, that's why you really can't take it seriously.
Yeah, you're right. I think that, and certainly people are going to have that impression, like, who's this interloper? Oh, he's coming from the network television world, coming into my domain. He doesn't know how we do things here. And you go, all right, listen, I think of the great Ernie Harwell line, of course, the Tigers play-by-play guy. He said that when you start a new job, people are initially resistant and they're going to crush you no matter what, just because they're like, whatever. And he goes, after you're there for a year, 2 years, five, whatever it is, he said, it doesn't matter if they like you or they hate you. They just get used to you. And I think ultimately what's happened, there will be fans who will say, I can't stand him, but I've been listening to him for so long, I have no choice. And, and as you and I both know, ultimately you're watching the event. Like, who cares who the announcers are?
Well, I'd push back on that a little bit only for, listen, on a Monday Night Raw, does it matter? Like you said about the mistakes, to me, and this goes across all sports, I've said this before.
Yeah.
And a broadcaster, play-by-play, messes up a name, messes up a number. To me, that's so irrelevant. You're doing live TV 3 hours. There's going to be a mistake here and there.
Right. Listen,
you don't want to blow a game-winning call.
Of course.
And the mistakes happen. That is not how I would judge. That's not how I judge broad. I mean, listen, if you're making, you know, 15 mistakes a game, yeah, then there's going to be an issue. But a mistake, one or two on a name is not the end of the world if you're doing a good job with everything else.
Yeah.
But I will say I push back only a little because, you know, in the case of like Jim Ross, for instance, WWE probably doesn't want me mentioning this because he's with AD, but like he added a lot to a lot of matches, so there you can do that. But again, that's a lifelong guy in the business, became sort of their iconic broadcaster, and but you can add. I definitely think you can add to the matches, which I think just takes time. On you know, in your case, I mean, since you've been there 2 weeks,
no question. Right. I'll be clear. You can enhance the broadcast. My point is only simply, as you've written in your column or said to people, you're going to watch the Super Bowl regardless, right?
Right.
If you like Jim Nantz or not. But I do agree with you. A great broadcast can certainly enhance the product. That's true.
Yeah. Now tell me, I need your schedule. Now give me the schedule now that you have Raw, because I know you did Raw obviously 2 nights ago on Monday.
Yeah.
And then you were on baseball. Why do I keep saying Baseball Network? What the hell is that? MLB Network on Tuesday.
That's right.
And then you have all these other jobs mixed in, taping two podcasts. You do the movie podcast, then you have a GM Shuffle podcast. I need the weekly schedule. Take me through it.
Sure. So I'll give you this week in particular. So
yeah.
Sunday morning was my eldest son, 12-year-old Yusuf, had to go to his baseball game. So that was great. Came home. Other boys are 9, 4, and 2. Quick Sunday brunch together. Then I bounce, take the flight, gets to Sunday night to Florida. Raw on Monday. Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. flight. We're going Tampa to Atlanta. No direct that early. Atlanta to Newark. Land at 10:30-ish. And then 11 a.m. meeting. I'm into MLB Network at 11:30. I did a show called The Rundown, me and Bill Ripken from 3 until 4. Dan O'Dowd involved as well. Came home, taped some stuff for DAZN. DAZN has NFL rights in Canada, so I'm doing some mock drafts with the draft coming up, as you know, next week. So taped some stuff there.
Everybody has a mock draft.
Oh, my God, right?
You're not breathing if you don't have a mock draft.
Yeah. Let me tell you what's happened with the Lions at 7. Okay, sure, you know. Knocked that out. And then today, 8 a.m. I did some radio in Toronto. I do like radio hits. 9 o'clock at the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. Again, we did our mock drafts, what to expect. Now I'm talking with you. Tonight I'm going to do an interview with Chase Claypool, of course, the Steelers receiver who's Canadian. He's going to do his version for DAZN. Tomorrow I've got baseball, MLB Network. The day after that, I'll be doing NHL Network, which also owns MLB Network.
Right.
And then Saturday I got baseball. Well, and then Sunday I'll fly. So
when do you do the movie podcast?
Oh, so Cinephiles. Thank you for reminding me. Yeah. So Cinephiles, I normally tape on Tuesdays. And of course the Oscars are on Sundays. So the good news is, you know, with podcasts, It's at home. It's loose. I've got some notes, but you know, we're freestyling
you,
a little
in
bit.
In between all this, are you trying to still catch up on the WWE storylines and stuff like that?
100%. So yeah. That's the big thing, as you know, it's not just plug and play. I mean, right. Al Michaels is doing Sunday Night Football. He doesn't just show up and go, all right, guys, what do we got? So it's still a matter of keeping up, just going on the website, watching YouTube videos, trying to learn all the finishing moves, get the verbiage straight. Because as you said, it's a lot, but I think you have to embrace the challenge. You have to realize that you're only going to be as good as the preparation and your work ethic is.
Now, you mentioned you're doing MLB Network, NHL Network, you have Raw, NFL stuff. At ESPN, you did college football. Do you have one favorite sport?
Yeah, baseball has always been my favorite sport. So, I mean, growing up in Eastern Ontario, it was always baseball in the summer and hockey in the winter. So I'm grateful that I got to do baseball tonight for so many years. And I, when people would ask me, you know, 9 years at ESPN, what was your highlight? I think probably the number one, not that you're asking me this, but the number one day was when I filled in for Bob Lee on Outside the Lines. And then I got in the car and filled in for Oberman when he was doing a show in New York. And I said, you know, that's a pretty tough one to pull off. To say you can fill in for Bob Lee and Keith Oberman the same day. That's pretty good. But the second one would be I got to call games at Yankee Stadium, Wrigley Field, Fenway Park. As a baseball life, for the fact I got to call those games and go to the World Series, that's always been my favorite. And MLB Network's been amazing. And I should say, again, thanks to Rob McLeary, my boss is there. You know, Jimmy, other companies would say, hey, listen, you're ours and this is it. The fact that they allow you to do other things, you know, Shahadi does stuff for Turner, Baskerjian works on ESPN. That's really cool that they allow us to do that.
Yeah. Oh, listen, in this business, I mean, almost everyone has more than one job. It's, I mean, you're a little over the top, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do, you know. But I mean, but, that, you know, obviously you had this famous dismissal from ESPN a few years ago. Did you ever think then when that was going on that you'd end up in this position? I mean, because there is this thing, it used to be where, like, you know, if you were in sports and you didn't work for ESPN or you were let go from ESPN, it's the end of the world. No one moves on. But we've seen it now over and over with, you know, Dan Patrick, Eisen, et cetera. There is life after ESPN.
Yeah.
But you've really added a ton to the resume. So what, you know, when that happened, did you ever think you'd get to this point?
No way. I mean, it's beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, at that point, it's just, okay, take a deep breath. Let's get through this. You know, faith, family, friends. All right, how do we get through this? And I think the biggest thing is what people have told me, people who have lost jobs and tried to bounce back, they said, you know, as cliche as it may sound, you know, ignore the setback, focus on the comeback. But the most important things are this, it's character and reputation and your actual work. So they said, you know, people, prospective employers are going to say, is this guy good or not, right? If you see him on television or on the radio or podcast, can he deliver or not? Does he have the chops? And then furthermore, everyone knows everyone in this business, as you know, they're going to text people, go, what kind of guy is he? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Right. Easy to work with, difficult? So I think if you have actual talent, God-given talent, and you're actually a good person, treat people well, hopefully things will work out for you. But to your point, I never would have imagined six jobs 2 years later.
I don't want to rehash what happened. Everyone knows what happened. I'm just curious, though, when you look back now, do you think it was fair what ESPN did?
You know, it's interesting. I think at the time, obviously, it was very upsetting. And you don't even really kind of, because you're in that bubble, it's hard to be objective about it. You know, I think it was an overreaction on their part. But at the same time, you know, it's a major corporation that they're overseeing. And I understand how, you know, public sentiment appeared to be on my side. And I said, well, of course it is. Like, I'm the little guy from Canada, and they're a big, bad, monolithic ESPN. So it's not always a fair argument the way things get framed. But in my view, I thought it was an overreaction. I thought it was unnecessary. But at the same time, Jimmy, all that I'm doing now is based on the 9 years that I put there, right? To this day, people still go, I remember that guy, ESPN guy. So I the 72 hours of tumultuous ending, it never erases the good feelings of 9 years that I had, all the friends that I keep in touch with, and all the great relationships. So I think in the moment, you know, it's kind of like a relationship ending, right? In the moment, you go, I can't believe she dumped me. How could she do this to me? I'm a good guy. And then afterwards, you go, hey, you know what? It all works out for the best. And I'm incredibly grateful it's worked out for the best.
Yeah. Well, I think too, I mean, it's been proven out. I mean, what you did is not something that should prevent you from getting other jobs. So like, I'm not, you know, the bounce back shouldn't be that shocking because it wasn't, I mean, people get let go for so much worse. I mean, that definitely seemed a bit over the top at the time. So.
Yeah. I think that's always tricky too, is when people say, okay, you know, whenever something happens, okay, what was the action? Who is the person, right? To your point, you know, it's almost like you get caught for speeding. all right, and then you get thrown in jail. Like, wait, hang on a second. Like,
that's what it seemed like, yeah.
Right, it's like, how many times has this happened? Where did this happen? Let's get through this. Like, first offense, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and you're going to have people like me defending you because we want people to leak stuff to us. So, like, you know, we can't really say this is a disgrace that he was leaking information, you know?
Well, the funniest thing is when I had people who were like, again, like, they're listening on my behalf. They're like, oh, you should listen to Marshan and Trina. I said, okay, I'm trying to get a job right now, but you can send me a transcript of what Jimmy and Andrew are saying about me.
All right. Here's what you should be. Now you should be bragging about the fact that you got the WWE Monday Night Raw job in February and it didn't come out until April 12th. Like, there you go. You've proven that you could, you know, there you go. That's all you need.
Right. Look at this guy.
That's what should have been leaked.
Exactly. That's the top line here. Yeah.
It's funny too, because I got laid off. I you know, left SI, went to Fox Sports, got laid off, and luckily back. And like you said, you know, once you survive those first few days, it's sort of like almost anything. You know, I see this with people when they get in these Twitter controversies. Like, you got to take 48 hours and just do nothing. And then you'll see it, you know, sort of, if anyone's out there looking for like broadcasting advice, like, just, you know, when there's insanity, take 2 days to just relax and then you can sort of focus and go forward.
Yeah, but I think you and I are probably both sympathetic individuals. But what happens is when you go through it, you become even more empathetic. So what we've gone through in the last year, particularly sports media, you know, seeing friends lose their jobs in the business, you really feel for them. But that's why I make the effort. And I think I did before, but now it's especially to call and text, hey, man, hang in there. Just get through it.
Yeah. This past year, what's it been like for you in terms of work, working from home? Not a problem. Don't like it. I mean, you have so many jobs, so I would imagine, you know, you got to get used to it, but that doesn't mean you like it.
Yeah. I'm one of our other favorites, Seinfeld, said that, like, I'm just tired of seeing people's backgrounds. Like, I don't care about your kids and your dogs. And you're just like, I want to see you in the studio. Like, it's enough now. I felt the same way. Like, especially, I'm a huge talk show fan. Obviously Larry Sanders going back, fictional talk show, but like when I'm watching Colbert or whatever, or Kimmel, I was like, this just isn't the same seeing them in their den. Right. Like, I'm tired of these.
It was cool for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like everyone should be out of their element a little bit sometimes. But after like 2 weeks, it definitely got old.
Yeah. But now, I think to your point, you have to be malleable. You just have to adjust.
Yeah.
My biggest fear is with all these kids running around, someone's going to make some noise. That's always my thing. I'm like, oh, how unprofessional is that going to look? But to your point, some people go, oh, it makes this guy a little more likable. He's got a bunch of kids running around with him.
Listen, that's life. You know, I'm thinking, it just hit me now. I'm an idiot for not realizing this too. Like, you still haven't called an event, WWE, you've only done it 2 weeks, but no fans.
Yeah,
that is going to be an experience and a half when you finally get to do it raw with fans in the stands.
That's what I keep telling people, man. I go, listen, this is all great fodder for the book. Like, chapter 7, WWE, like, the first time I'm calling raw with fans there, it's going to be electric. I can't even imagine.
Then forget Twitter. You'll get it like right in your face.
Don't tell me how much I suck to my face. Exactly. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's the thing. You know, that's the thing, though. No one will say it to your face. So, you know,
wrestling fans
might. They might be the one group who, you know.
Well, the thing is, though, you know, you have to have a sense of humor about it. Like, it's the old axiom, right? Take your work seriously. Don't take yourself seriously.
Yeah.
And like, I think, you know, Joe Buck is a great example of somebody who's always great with Twitter. Like, yeah, I'm just cheering against your team. Like, yeah, that's exactly what this is about.
Have you gotten, I mean, listen, like I said, it's only been 2 weeks, but have you gotten to know any of the WWE superstars a little bit? I'm sure you've probably just had maybe, I don't know if you've had more than just brief conversations, but I mean, you know, I have them on this podcast when I can, because it's a fascinating lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
And life. It's just, you know, like a guy like Roman Reigns, who I've had on a bunch. I mean, when he comes on, he's one of the greatest guys. And, you know, he was on one talking about how much he loves Seinfeld. Like, you don't get any of that when you're watching WWE program. You could bomb at Roman Reigns.
You talked about shrinkage. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah.
So, but they're, you know, fascinating people, and what they do, no one else in the world does. So from that standpoint, it's, you know, they're very unique.
Oh, it's amazing, Jimmy. And you know it because you're a fan of it. But like, when I first went there for the audition, I was like, the athleticism is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I'm watching it. It's again, like in a movie, like you're watching people behind the scenes. It's so well orchestrated. It's so smart to go, okay, I'm going to try this flip and this suplex and this here. I'm like that. Like, anybody who can't appreciate this clearly is lost. Unless you see it up close and personal. I would recommend anyone, once we can actually go back to a live show, when you see it, you go, this is so intricate. But to your point, I've met them backstage, kind of this like cursory conversations, but everyone's really friendly, very welcoming. Big E, I was so happy when I met him. He was like, hey, Hadney. I'm like, hey. He's like, oh, I used to watch it in college football all the time. I'm like, oh, thank thanks. It's your point.
Well, a lot of them are big sports fans, yeah.
Right. So all these guys
Roman Reigns played in college, yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's a pretty fun background as well.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
All right, let's switch gears to the movie. So, you know, I didn't want to just have you on for Raw. I knew you could talk about other sports and the movies thing. And then I was like, you know, I'm a little embarrassed to tell you this.
You haven't seen any of the Oscar nominees.
Forget the Oscar nominees. I've seen, I think, two movies in in the past year. I saw Borat and Great. Coming to America 2. I'm a comedy drama guy. I don't do sci-fi. I don't do the Star Wars and the Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. Give me comedy or drama with some realism mixed in. So the only two movies I've seen this year are Borat and Coming to America. So let's start with that. Give me your review of both of those.
I thought Borat was fascinating. And I said on my podcast, Cinephile, which, as you mentioned, was previously on Cadence 13 and now with Meadowlark Media, which is the Dan Levitt.
By the way, not to interrupt, but you mentioned backgrounds before. If anyone's watching this on YouTube, your background is phenomenal. You don't have the fake bookshelves with all the bullshit books that nobody reads. You've got one poster, and it's your Cinephile, but from ESPN. They fired you. You got to rip that down. What are you doing?
I'm going to somehow figure it away just to get a magic marker.
Yeah, just block out the ESPN thing. Come on. What the hell?
Amateur hour here. This is actually a point about a guy that's home setup. But I thought it was amazing, Jimmy. And I tell people, I go, that guy, Sacha Baron Cohen, is like Daniel Day-Lewis.
Genius.
Okay, that's method acting. Like, he literally, when he is staying at those guys' houses, that was in character for a week. This isn't a couple of takes. All right, cut, let's regroup. You know, he is like that all the time. Like, I don't care if you like his politics. I don't care if you like the movie or appreciate his messaging. It's remarkable work he's doing. I wish he was up for Best Actor. I'm glad the film is at least received recognition. Maria Bakalova is up for Supporting Actress.
Right.
She might win. I don't think she will. If they're up for screenplay, they might win. But I honestly, I go, this guy should win an Academy Award. It's remarkable the effort he does.
He really should have been nominated for the first one. I loved the second one, too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. The first one is really remarkable, what he did, I thought. You know, the second one, he's got some experience with it. But
if you watch a lot of movies, like someone like I do, what you care for more than anything is originality. You want to see something fresh. When Siskel and Ebert first raved about Fargo, and I was in college watching, they kept saying, I've never seen a movie like Fargo. It is, to your point, it's a comedy, it's a crime film, it's a drama, it's a hearkening to past films, etc. So it's like a movie film festival. With Borat, the first one, it was so audacious. It's very rare to say, I've never seen anything like this before. And again, as Larry Sanders guys, Schanling was a big influence on Sacha Baron Cohen. He said Schanling was unbelievable in terms of helping him
know that. Cross that line.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. If you watch the documentary that Apatow did on Schanling, Sacha Baron Cohen is in there and he goes, Gary would send me notes in the first Borat. It was amazing.
I did not know that. That's unbelievable.
And he goes, so growing up in England, he goes, there's BBC One, which was like EastEnders and these classic shows. He goes, BBC Two was the more avant-garde shows. And that's where the Larry Sanders Show was. And he goes, and me and my buddies all said, this is the best show on TV. So it really inspired him.
Well, I was a huge fan of Sacha Baron Cohen from the Ali G show on HBO. And I remember watching that. Now, I don't know. Did you watch that when it was on originally? On
I did
HBO?
Not when it was originally.
It was like Friday or Saturday nights at like 11 o'clock or midnight. And I remember watching it. And, this was before Twitter. So I miss that feeling too. Like I would be watching going, does anyone see what's going on here? Like, what is anyone else seeing the show? This is the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
It's like the meteor, which nobody else is paying attention to.
Yeah, that's what it felt. It felt like that's how I was blown away. And, he'd go from Ali G to Borat to Bruno. And it was unlike anything I had ever seen before. And so when I knew Borat would be good just based off that, I had no doubt. And you don't want to do that sometimes because things don't live up to the hype. That obviously exceeded the hype.
Oh, yeah. And the funniest is when you actually see him in interviews, he's so eloquent and articulate and passionate. You go, wow, yeah. It takes an intelligent person to play the fool, right? Yeah. You can't go the other way around, but he can really dive into it.
Before coming to America, you mentioned them. So I'm just curious, were you, because you're so into movies, were you a big Siskel and Ebert guy? Were they a big influence on you?
When people ask me my favorite TV shows, I'll start listing through Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry Sanders Show, The Sopranos, Homicide, Life on the Street, Siskel and Ebert. They go, wait, what? I go, that's one of the greatest television shows ever. And you know this in the media beat. You can't throw a stone 5 minutes and go, that show's influenced by Siskel and Ebert. Crossfire, First Take, right. First things first, it's all Siskel and Ebert. One guy's arguing here. I go back and watch old clips sometimes. If you watch them arguing about The Doors, it's amazing. And it formed so much of my education as a cinematic fan because they were so passionate. And you could honestly see both sides of the argument. And when they really agreed, like do the right thing, Hoop Dreams, like they were champions for films like that.
So it's funny you say that. I went back into the rabbit hole and watched a bunch of them. When I did it? I did it when Coming to America came out because I wanted to see their review of the first one.
Yeah.
One liked it and one didn't. And then I watched a bunch of their reviews. I'm a big Howard Stern guy. So I watched their review of Private Parts, which was fascinating to see.
They love Giamatti, right? I think they nailed the fact. Hey, this pig vomit guy's great. And Giamatti had become
and no one knew who he was at the time.
Correct.
Yeah. And they had high praise for, I knew them, I watched their show, but also they were great guests on Howard's show. So that I was curious to see what their review would be because back then everyone was repulsed by Howard, who was in the media and they loved him. So that sort of, I was intrigued by that.
Yeah.
That show was for that time was really, really, groundbreaking and, all about chemistry, chemistry.
Right. And hugely influential. And the fact that the catchphrase I still remember, the balcony is closed. The fact that Two Thumbs Up took off and some people like despised them among film criticism because they said, listen, we're used to these long form, elaborate pieces from Pauline Kael and Andrew Saris. And now it's being reduced to Two Thumbs Up. Like we are dumbing down society. It's kind of like the way Twitter has done this now. You go, that's what I do with Cinephile. It's like, I am elaborate. I want to be as garrulous as possible talking about these reviews. I don't want 12 seconds. I don't want Rotten Tomatoes to give you 83%. That means it's good. So I think Siskel and Ebert, they were unfairly criticized. If you read Ebert's print reviews, they were amazing. Like he can go, he'll let you 10,000 words Taxi Driver. Yeah. And it's really, really exceptionally well-written. But their chemistry, to your point, off the air, not always close friends. Like there's a great documentary on Roger Ebert, which they call Cut, and they start sniping at each other. You keep screwing this up. You keep doing this. I was like, all right. So it was genuinely animosity was there as well.
There's great outtakes of them on YouTube.
Oh,
if you're listening and haven't seen it. Yeah. So Coming to America 2, what was...
So high expectations, like that, all of us.
I think we're going to be on the same page.
And then you see it and you go, okay. And then I was lucky enough, I got to see the screener ahead of time because I interviewed Louis Anderson, who, by the way, was great. He was on the podcast, a wonderful guy, really salt of the earth. And he's not in it nearly enough for my liking. But anyways, when they give you a screener and they give you a couple interviews, you go, okay, well, human nature, you don't want to crush the thing now. They did give me 20 minutes of Louis Anderson. And then I watched the movie and I go, all right, all the best jokes are the rehashes and retreads of the original. So anytime a sequel comes out, the key is you have to have the DNA of the original, but then extend it and add in new information. And I thought, The callbacks, the barbershop scenes, of course, incredible. We could have a whole movie of that. There's a movie called Barbershop inspired by what Eddie Murphy did. But I thought the new material wasn't enough to carry it. It felt a little softened and diluted.
I feel like we just became best friends just in this moment right here. Because what happened was I was waiting for this movie. I think Eddie is the funniest person of my lifetime.
Yeah.
I was waiting for this movie. Obviously, the first one's one of my, you know, favorites of all time.
Yeah.
And I got a screener. I did a giveaway in my column in Train of Thoughts, watched the movie and was like, oh boy. And I couldn't tweet about it, which, you know, in this day and age is like, you know, not being able to breathe.
Right.
Here's what bummed me out the most. I felt like Eddie was barely in it.
Yeah. He was not
the star of the movie. He should be in every scene.
Right. And he was like a small supporting member of the movie.
What?
Yeah.
What? I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And like, I get the fact that, oh, let's get the gang back together again. We want all the people there. But yeah, like John Amos is barely in it then. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, I guess it
way
falls
too much of the sun. Way too much of the sun.
And I think Eddie, here's the other part of it too. Apparently they had like, whatever, 7 different scripts over the last 30 years. I wanted to say, can I see the other 6 scripts? Like, this is the one that you go, you know what? Took a long time, but now I'm in. Like, I'm a little surprised. To your point about when you see it and you're cautious about what to say. Owen Gleiberman, the great critic for Entertainment Weekly and now Variety, he tells a story about Ben Affleck. He goes, you know, Affleck, if you meet him, he's a very charming, disarming guy. But I had to be honest about his reviews. So he goes, you know, I'd meet him, we'd be talking, and I'd be like, man, you really crushed Daredevil, huh? You really hated Geely, huh? Yeah. And he goes, like, these guys are reading it. But to Affleck's credit, he knew. He just like, and Gleiberman was like, I got to do it, man. And he goes, and when Argo was made, I said, Ben, this is you. You're such a smart guy. You're a great director. Acting, you weren't getting good roles. But
that's funny.
Just imagine if you and I meet Eddie Murphy one day and he goes, oh, yeah. So I heard what you said about the sequel.
I'm slightly distracted because I just saw a tweet that New York has officially now signed the bill that will bring mobile sports betting to New York. So I want to jump out of my chair and start celebrating. I'm going to try to keep it professional.
Listen, bad beats. You and Van Pelt. I heard it.
Besides Godfather 2, since we're talking about Coming to America, what's the best sequel of all time? You can't say The Godfather 2, though.
I was about to say, because that is the correct answer. I think Empire Strikes Back is pretty good. You know, I think they actually did a really good job with that in terms of, you know, trying to have the elements of the first one a little bit darker and go in a different direction. You know, it's really hard, especially with comedies. Like I think Back to the Future 2, I actually think is reasonable. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but I think it has good elements of science fiction and still elements of the love in the story. But it's oftentimes you just focus on the negative ones. Like, you know, Fletch Lives, I guess, is all right. Caddyshack 2 is memorably awful. Like, it's a very short list. It's Godfather 2, Empire Strikes Back, Back to the Future 2. That's about it.
I'd give you a sequel I like, but you'd probably hang up the Zoom. Grease 2. Michelle Pfeiffer. Love it. Dancing on the Ladder. Great. Well, listen, Agents Med.
If that's your rationale, Jimmy, then I can accept it. If you actually try to describe the cinematography and the storytelling, I'm like, no. Michelle Pfeiffer, I'm in.
Yeah.
Well, Agents that was like, Med. Oh, you got to look at me. You got to look up.
Cole Ryder. Oh, my God. That movie.
I think it's Roger Ebert's review of Michelle Pfeiffer in The Fabulous Baker Boys. It is. You got to look it up. I'm messing it up. But the first couple lines were Michelle Pfeiffer in a tight red slinky dress dances on a piano. The rest of the movie is also quite good. It's one of the most famous.
Roger would not get away with that review in 2021. That's for sure.
No, there's no way.
The Oscars are Sunday. I don't care about what's nominated. Give me three movies in the past year that anyone listening to this podcast needs to watch.
I'm glad you said that, because I get confused. People say the Oscars Sunday, what should I watch? And I say, okay, do you want me to tell you what's going to win?
No,
or do you want me to tell you what I think is good?
What you think.
So Sound of Metal, I think, is remarkable. You've got to see it. Okay. It stars Riz Ahmed. He's an incredible actor. He was in the show The Night Of, as you said, as a TV guy. I'm sure you saw the HBO limited series, John Turturro. Originally, our boy Gandolfini was going to do it. He passed away. Turturro comes in. Riz is amazing. He plays a heavy metal drummer who suddenly loses his hearing. And I don't think there's a lot of great films about being hearing impaired, what that's like. Remarkable performance. You know, he learned sign language, got into that world. It's very, very immersive. Since you're a comedy guy, there's a great comedy called The Climb. And I loved it. And I interviewed the actor Michelangelo Covino, who wrote, directed, and starred in it. This is going to turn you off, but bear with me. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a comedy done with a European sensibility.
I don't mind that.
It's almost got like this kind of French aesthetic to it. And it's got these incredibly long takes. We love Goodfellas. The most famous tracking shot ever is, of course, the Coppola shot. There's about 8 or takes in this movie. I talked to the guys, interviewed him and Kyle Marvin. I go, It was like 7 minute shots. You don't see that in a comedy, such exquisite attention to detail in terms of a long tracking shot. And they go, we wanted the comedy to stay in the frame and we felt it worked. The LA Times, forget me, LA Times call it possibly the greatest bromance movie of all time. So check out The Climb. If you're a comedy guy, I think you'll really enjoy that. And, you know, I also really liked Palm Springs. I thought was a really good comedy with Andy Samberg on Hulu, but I would go with Nomadland. That's going to win Best Picture this weekend. It's with Frances McDormand. I thought it was excellent. High quality. Yeah.
The Oscars, you know, there's this thing going on with award shows where basically no one's watching them anymore. It's kind of crazy. And I don't know how, I feel bad for them this year. I mean, after what we've gone through the past year with no movie theaters open, what's the situation now? Have you gone to a movie theater since vaccinated or before?
I did, yeah. So what happened was, I remember when everything, the world fell apart, I said to my wife, this shows you how sick I am. I said, I got to get to the theater. She's like, what? I said,
So before COVID, how often would you go to the theater?
So I probably go, like, listen, in my heyday, pre-kids, I mean, it was, you know, every week, twice a week, three times a week. Now, I would say probably with kids and everything, probably once a week, maybe every other week. So with screeners, it's a big help. And you can say, okay, this is on Netflix, Hulu, et cetera. Or the studios will send you stuff. Once I got into the Broadcast Film Critics Association, that was a game changer once they send you stuff. But as you know, you only get sent stuff during award season. So that's only, generally speaking, September to December. So if I want to see a movie tomorrow, I go pay my $14 to AMC and Paramus, and I go check it out in North Jersey. So when everything was happening, I said to my wife, I got to get to the theater. She goes, why? I go, they're going to shut them down. So The Way Back with Ben Affleck was the last movie I saw pre-pandemic. Didn't see a movie in theaters for 4 months, which is the longest it's been in 40 years. But once we were back and to be safe, and I mean, again, I'm like you. I take it seriously. I had the mask on the whole time. I watched Tenet, Christopher Nolan's movie, which, to be honest, I waited 4 months for a movie. Would have liked a better film. It was not one of Christopher Nolan's best films. But I'm still trying to go. I'll take my kids. I took them to see Croods 2. Yeah. I mean, they love going popcorn, slushy, all that kind of stuff. But thankfully in Jersey, we've opened up.
You know, it'd be great. You know what you should, I don't want to like tell you what to do, but now that you got the Monday Night Raw gig,
yeah,
it would be great if you went back and reviewed some of the famous, there's a couple of famous wrestling documentaries. Well, if you want, there's Beyond the Mat.
Yeah.
The Bret Hart Shadows, the Bret Hart one. I forgot something. Shadows.
Sure.
Even the movie, The Wrestler, I'm sure you watch with
Aronofsky. Yeah. Mickey Rourke.
What do you think of that?
Remarkable. I remember I saw the Toronto Film Festival. I saw it with my boss at the time, and I just thought it was so brave and convincing and just immersive. And movies like that, they generally give you an out, right? At the end, there's going to be some sort of redemption.
Yeah, yeah.
But that scene with Marissa Tomei and him at the back, I thought it was so powerfully written when she says, you know, I'm here. I'm really here. And he goes, you see that? That's where I live. Like his only glory is when he finds he's in the ring. And it's incredibly despairing and depressing, but I thought it was really authentic. He was remarkable in it.
So Sunday night you'll watch the Oscars, and then Monday night you'll call Raw. That's a fascinating combination for someone, I must say.
People tell me, they go, what is this? Movies and sports? I said, it must be some sort of fascination with escapism, right? I must just be so miserable within my own skin. I go, okay, I've got to get out of me and go look at the movies and the sports. But you're right, that there's not many who can pull off that kind of double.
Yeah. And have you talked at all with Pat McAfee? Because he's obviously just coming into this now, and it's, you know, sort of you two are the newbies together.
Yeah. So Pat and I were together at the Zone briefly, and I was on his radio show a couple of times, and he's great. Funny guy. I haven't reached out yet, but I've been meaning to. We're mutual friends with Michael Lombardi. Mike and I do the GM Shuffle together, NFL podcast. So I tweeted with each other back and forth. How ridiculous is that, by the way? In the past, you could say I called him. Now you can say we tweeted with each other. We hope to have a conversation at some point.
That's pretty much how it goes.
I thought Pat was great, though. I don't know if you watched it, but he's such a natural showman. I mean, he's amazing.
I watched about a half an hour, and I thought he was really good.
Oh,
I thought he was really good. I mean, for his first time, and you know, I think, you know, I talked about this with Edge. You said you listened to it. I think
72 books and a big hockey guy.
Yeah, big hockey. But I'm a believer. I don't know where the WWE stance is these days on. I'm a big believer that you need not a little. I think you need a lot of humor on Raw and SmackDown. I mean, that's what got me into it in the, you know, like you mentioned Heenan. I remember watching Primetime, which was this old show in the 80s. It's probably the greatest wrestling show of all time. And I watched it. It would be Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan in studio, and then they would cut to matches. I would be livid when they cut to the matches. I wanted Bobby and Gorilla. So, you know, the humor for me is always, you know, I've always, like a guy like Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, I have zero, like they do nothing for me. They don't talk. They're not, you know, the reason why The Rock is like, you know, my favorite person of all time.
Yeah.
Give me some humor. So I think McAfee will fit in very well in that role.
Yeah, it's sports entertainment. I completely agree with you. If you're not having fun, you're doing something wrong. You should feel like you're trying to sell the sizzle. It's not just hyperbole, but you have to be able to have that certain element of panache. I used to always say that about ESPN. I said it's entertainment and sports programming network. You've got to have that element, especially in today's world, to be able to try to cut through.
The problem with that, I find, and I know you probably got to get going, but this is a whole other topic. But I personally think it's really, really hard to do humor in sports.
Yeah.
I would say 95% of the time, it's a complete disaster.
So wait, you were not a fan of Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football?
I mean, that was so long ago that I don't even really remember it. I probably would have liked it just from the train wreck aspect of it, because I'm down with that too. But when traditional sports companies try to be funny, it's a very, very fine line there.
I guess it depends. Is it live event or is it studio?
Here's the thing. I'm a guy, I'm more into the dry, like I love Van Pelt because it's a dry humor.
Right.
A lot of it is sort of like over the top or obvious humor. And then it's like,
Groaning.
Even like the jokes last Tuesday night, then, everyone was outraged about the Raiders tweet. And then people were like trying to of course, dunk on it and then try to be funny about it. And it's like, you're all saying the same thing. There's not, hard to do sports humor, I think.
Well, I knew that, especially with SportsCenter, like it went from an era of everyone had a catchphrase, the Haiti of the 90s. I mean, I adored Oberman, obviously, Patrick, all those guys, Stu, Rich Eisen. And then when I was there, it was almost like, hey, listen, you'll actually stand out if you don't do that. If you're actually a legit sports fan who's knowledgeable and insightful, that will do better for you than if you've got a one-liner every 10 seconds. Like, that's why I think a guy like Steve Levy is so great. He's a friend, I'm biased, but I just think he's always just been a great, passionate broadcaster.
Yeah. Well, the one-liners are good if they're different, you could probably drop so many movie references into a Monday Night Raw. It would be,
I've done a handful so far. Yeah. So the people are keeping track of it. You're like, all right, Million Dollar Baby. I heard Make Him an Offer You Don't Refuse. I'll get Hey Now in next week for us. We'll get Larry Sanders in.
All right. Hey Now would be great. I love a Hey Now. Poor Hank.
So I'd tell you, Hank, I mean, God, Hank's Night in the Sun. I don't know if you watched that one again, but go back. He gets to fill in for Larry because he's sick.
It's
one of the greatest episodes ever because he gets a big head. He's delusional and he gets right down the size. The Roast is an amazing episode where Larry's getting destroyed. That's season 5. The Book is a great episode, season 5. I hope anyone listening to this goes back and watches some of the Larry Sanders Show. And Sopranos, favorite episode. I don't know actually your favorite episode. I'm going to say Long-Term Parking. Go ahead.
Mine is Whitecaps.
Yeah. I mean, so
I know everyone says Pine Barrens. The scene in Whitecaps with Tony and Carmella, I think, is the greatest scene I've ever seen on TV.
When he punches the wall, in Seppenwall's book, which I'm sure you've read, it was a great read. Him and Matt Soller-Seitz. Yeah. They refer to that. They go, that's like Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. Like, that's like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Yeah. But it'd be Who's Afraid of These Two Mooks? Like, that's like the Italian version of that. It's just a couple just being frayed apart. The rawness of that, the honesty of that. The scene. Dreamed about Furio every night.
But there was a scene before that when
she throws the stuff out.
Call from the Russian.
Yeah. I've been sleeping with
Tony.
And
he comes home. She's throwing his stuff out the window. He comes home.
Yeah.
And they fight and she just breaks down. And those two scenes, but Pine Barrens is just, I mean, what can you even say at this point about Pine Barrens? Here's what blew me away.
The best line of Pine Barrens is interior decorator. And then Chris goes, his house looked like shit.
Right. What blew me away when I had them on was I believe they said not one word of The Sopranos was ever improvised. Every word written. So even that scene where they're in the van towards the end and they're eating the ketchup.
Yeah.
And Holly says, try it with the relish. Like, someone wrote that line. You would think that's all, we're just two assholes in the woods. Like, all that, every word written in that episode, which is really, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, David Chase, I don't know if you've ever talked to him, but God, he's got stories for days. I mean, especially with their background, being Italian, you could appreciate what he was going through, all that kind of stuff, putting all that stuff.
I related to way too much of that show, way too much. Let's wrap with this. The Sopranos movie, do you have high expectations or what are you?
I'm a little bit concerned just because, again, as we've discussed with sequels, whenever there's time separating, it's hard to recapture that DNA. And so much of the show, and I watched a lot during the pandemic like everyone else, was that Gandolfini was such an integral part of it. Now, yeah, it's interesting what Chase said. Tom Fontana, who I love, whenever, and I don't want to get upset people, but The Wire, blah, blah, blah. Okay, what I tell people, I go, Homicide: Life on the Street is the show that I love, the Baltimore cop show that David Simon did before The Wire. Mm-hmm. Tom Fontana is the guy who did that. You know him, yep, from St. Elsewhere and Oz, which is one of the great shows ever. He said Fontana gave Chase the idea because he was like, listen, I don't want to do a movie. Everyone's on my butt to do a movie. And he goes, why don't you do something about like Junior, like when they were kids, because that might be kind of interesting. And that's where, to someone like David Chase, goes, okay, that is new terrain that I can develop. But if you're a Sopranos, right, fan, you know that world. What I do find fascinating is at least Gandolfini's son's going to be in it. That's always interesting. I mean, that, yeah, scares me as, yeah, a Godfather guy. I just think of Godfather 3 and Sofia Coppola. Like whenever you have family ties, you're never sure if it's going to work. But hopefully the kid looks like his dad has that. The key is this. You've still got the principals involved. If David Chase was not involved, it was different directors, et cetera, then I get worried. But if it's the same crew, I hopefully it'll be all right. The Many Saints of Newark. Good title.
Yep. Yeah. That cast was so iconic to have a movie without that cast. I don't know. But yeah, all right, I didn't do it at the top. I'm going to try to do it now and wrap up with all your jobs. WWE Monday Night Raw, Monday Nights, USA Network. Yep. That's the big one right now. MLB Network, NHL Network, DAZN, which I always call DAZN, but I'm trying to be respectful. I'm calling it DAZN because you're on. Cinephile with Adnan Verk. Now, when does that go to the Lebatard?
It's going to be soon. I think it's even within a week or two, we're going to go over to the Meadowlark Network. So yeah, it's going to be back with John and Dan.
And then GM Shuffle with Mike Lombardi. Got it all.
Wow. Yeah, dude, you nailed it.
I don't know how you had time to do this.
I just wanted to give you my feedback. I was like, hey, I've listened to so many episodes. I could get your email, but I just want to tell you what I think.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you more listening than coming on. That means a lot, but thank you for coming on as well.
Well, whenever I would hear you, every episode say, hey, please subscribe, rate, and review. That's like me, like imploring people. This is how we keep things
going.
It's
so gross that you have to do it, but you have to do it.
And even like you'll do the previous episodes. Deitch does the same thing. I can't humiliate myself. Previous episodes included this. He was great. Yep. Last question for you. When Eisen said to you, this is before Curb, he said, because he'd seen them all, right? And he goes, Jimmy, there's one episode in particular that's going to be iconic. Which one do you think he was referring to?
I think it was probably the stupid hat, the Make America Great Again hat.
Oh, okay. No, because you said to him, there's going to be a Trump joke for sure. And you go, I predicted it. And you tweeted it. You go, see, I told you, I called it. Yeah. But he said, Jimmy, I've seen all the episodes. There's one episode in particular that I think is going to be iconic, like Palestinian chicken type level. I don't know what episode he meant.
The episode with the MAGA hat was iconic. And then there was the one where people thought Jeff was
Harvey Weinstein. That was the best laugh of the year.
Oh, my God.
When she looks at him, you son of a bitch. And like, oh, my God.
One thing I'm a little disappointed in, Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football had Jeff Garlin on his Ringer podcast this week.
Yeah.
And Jeff said they only do COVID stuff in like the first episode of the new season. It's not like a whole season of COVID, which, listen, I don't blame them for not wanting to do a whole season of COVID. They want to do, you know, Larry Schtick.
Sure.
But the COVID, I think, is just what he said is just, I think, in the first episode. So
okay, that's interesting.
I had high hopes for like Larry, like with the 6 feet apart and the hand sanitizer and the masks and the, you know.
Well, he was on, I think there's an article in the New York Times in which I think Cheryl Hines is some of the effect of Larry's been social distancing for years.
Right.
And like it was a great line. And even the pictures of him, like he's sitting in the house waving like the still. I go, it's such a classic.
I was hoping for a whole season of, you know, COVID Curb, but we're not getting it. But that's
by the way, another underrated part of the most recent season, I thought Richard Lewis, who I just adore. I mean, I love his 80s comedy. I thought Lewis, when he was doing Flowers for Algernon, that was one of the funniest things ever. The look on Vince Vaughn's face when he starts laughing when Lewis does the impression, amazing.
Richard Lewis has always been phenomenal on that show.
God, he's the adjective.
All right, take it easy and be careful with that announce table. You never know who's going to come flying through. It'll be networked the next night.
That was the big thing I was wondering. Like, all my friends are like, what if you take a steel chair across the back? I'm like, well, I'm going to be talking about the Yankees slump. Well, that's not going to look good.
Forget the steel chair. I mean, because that would be part of, you would know that's coming. I'm talking about, you know, they come, they throw the TVs. I've always wanted to do a thing about, like, I would love to know how much money the WWE spends on those monitors per year that get thrown when someone's going through the table. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
It's a good point. I was watching the movie Bugsy again. I'm staying too long. The movie Bugsy. Remember Joe Mantegna plays the actor and he tells Warren Beatty to come visit him. And he starts hitting guys and he goes, hey, Benny, you want to hit someone? That's what I feel like. I want to be like, hey, can I just do this once? Let me just try it.
I'm sure eventually it'll happen. It'll happen. See.
Fingers right. crossed.
Stay safe. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. All right. My thanks to Adnan Verk for the very, very fun conversation. Enjoyed it thoroughly. Hopefully you guys did too. If you liked it, subscribe to the SI Media podcast. It helps tremendously. And if you missed any recent episodes that you want to check out, or if you're new to listening to the podcast, if you're a gambling person, we had Todd Furman on last week to talk about a bunch of things related to sports betting. Sports media columnist for the New York Post, Andrew Marchand, 2 weeks ago. WWE superstar Edge, 3 weeks ago. Scott Van Pelt, 4 weeks ago. All recent interviews right here on the SI Media podcast. So give them a listen, subscribe, rate, and review. All right. Again, thanks, Adnan Verk. Thanks to you for listening. And we will see you next week right here on the SI Media podcast. Stay safe and take care.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.